I am Dr. Phil Soto at Indiana University School of Medicine, Department of Medicine, and we are talking about the term minority in academic medicine. This is for race violence medicine.
Dr. Soto, excellent job. Thank you very much. Welcome to the first episode of Season 4 of Race, Violence, and Medicine. I'm Dr. Brian H. Williams. I'm a trauma surgeon in South Chicago, a keynote speaker, and just another activist out there trying to make the world a better place. Now, I know you may be confused if you've been following the show since Season 1 that we are now on Season 4. I admit I kind of jacked up the numbering of the prior seasons, but from this point on, we're good. The seasons will follow the calendar years, so 2020 is all about Season 4. And since you're here, you should go back to my website, brianwilliamsmd.com, and check out the prior seasons. We have a lot of good episodes out there, so get yourself caught up, tell your family and friends what's happening. So today, we're going to talk about this concept of minorities in medicine, and not what it means to be a minority, what it means to be called a minority. And what do I mean by that? Well, to help us unpack all that is our guest, Dr. Silk Soto. No, did I say your last name correctly?
Yes, oh, yes, you did.
Okay, all right. She's vice chair for faculty. I'm bad. That is a host fail to not confirm that ahead of time, but we got it. Dr. Silk Soto, vice chair for faculty affairs, development and diversity at the Indiana University School of Medicine, and she has a paper out now called Time to Reconsider the Word Minority in Academic Medicine, and I'm ready to talk about this concept. Dr. Soto, thanks for joining us on Race, Violence, and Medicine.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. Is it okay if I call you Silk from now on, and you call me Brian?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I got to tell you, like, the title just grabbed me. Reconsider the word minority, because it resonates with me, because I myself am not comfortable using that term, but I do it because that's the accepted language we use to discuss those of us that are underrepresented in medicine. So let's give us some background about yourself and how you got to where you are to write about this particular topic.
Well, thank you, Brian. So the piece is actually a perspective piece on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And for years, I've been there was something that irked me about the word minority. Now, I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, so I think that's an important disclaimer, if you will, because I didn't quite know the concept of minority. I certainly know the concept of racism and colorism in Puerto Rico, but not necessarily the concept of minority until I actually came to the USA as an undergrad and ended up attending a traditionally white institution and really understanding what minority kind of meant for me. Again, that is not to say that it didn't exist in Puerto Rico. I was just not familiar what that could represent. So, you know, and starting to see these minority scholarships and things like that, I wonder why. Why does it have to say minority in it? And it wasn't later on, much later on, until I entered my doctorate in higher education, which I actually did in my 30s, that I really was able to process not only my race, ethnicity, and the experiences that I had as a student, an undergrad student, as a graduate student, as a professional in academic medicine. Academic medicine has been my home pretty much for over 19 years. And I am thankful for that opportunity. That's when I actually learned in higher ed that, you know, we don't use the word minority anymore. That indeed the word minoritization and seeing that as a social construct really helped me process that. I simply at the time had felt that the word minority was furthering the minoritization of individuals. And then also everything in academic medicine at the time still said underrepresented minority. And the piece that I wrote actually talks a little bit about how even because I was in academic medicine, I ended up using the word underrepresented minority in my own dissertation. And it felt uncomfortable all through those 300 pages or whatever, however many pages it was.
Well, it kind of makes sense because you said that you've been in academic medicine for 19 years, which is how long I've been in academic medicine. And I remember back then when we were getting into it, that was the push, was to increase the number of quote unquote underrepresented minorities. It was a noble undertaking, but what you're describing is the, I guess the negative impact of that sort of labeling on people that are going into academic medicine.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I know since then, for example, the American Association for Medical Colleges, it's pushing more towards underrepresented in medicine. Again, higher education uses the term as well, and minoritized students, minoritized faculty. And I am much more comfortable with that. So in this piece, I actually break it down in terms of four constructs, if you will. One is talking about the word itself, talking about in a majority-minority society, as we believe the U.S. is right now. Once the minoritized populations are the majority, then what are we going to be called, right?
Right.
We're no longer a minority, quote-unquote. I talk a little bit about this theory of a stereotype threat, which I think goes along with what you're saying in terms of labeling, right? A little bit of that Pygmalion effect also there. I talk a little bit about implicit bias and, again, what comes out of that, and then obviously talking about the term minoritization in those four.
So your contribution, you're suggesting use a new term, which is minoritization, and let me, if I get this correct, that takes the emphasis off of labeling the individual as being different and talks about the systems that lead to an individual not being part of the majority. Is that,
that
correctly?
You are such a good student.
All right, well, tell us more about that.
I'm very proud. Yes, yes. So basically what minoritization, and I didn't coin the term. I just want to be clear. There's a lot of smarter people than me. But minoritization recognizes that individuals are placed into this minority status or category by the system, by the inequalities, by oppression, by marginalization. And, you know, pretty much sustains that historically privileged social identity. So if we actually turn into focusing on minoritization, we shift the focus to the system rather than the individuals. And we actually say, I was not born a minority, right? I was minoritized, or I'm being minoritized by society or whatever my, I am situated.
Yeah. So I remember when I was applying to medical school and there's this one individual, I remember, he was also applying, and he says to me, well, you know, you have an advantage that I don't because you're Black. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, I've been to college, I took the MCAT, I did everything else that you all did, and I checked up all those boxes, and you said all that matters is because I'm Black.
I hate to say that I still don't think, especially this day and age, things have changed and we have made great progress. But You know, I think at the end of the day, I say this, that words matter as much as representation matters, right? So if we continue to use the word minority, there's actually no reason to use the word. and I would encourage, you know, my colleagues in medicine that, you know, refer to this group as underrepresented in medicine, because we are underrepresented in medicine. That we talk about our minoritization or minoritized students or minoritized faculty. Because I think by eliminating the use of the word minority, then we're really recognizing that it may have a negative impact on not only the scholarship, our wellness, our burnout, and you know, it has truly more power to marginalize those of us.
Well, there's some organizations like the Student National Medical Association, National Medical Association,
yes.
And part of their mission, you know, as stated, you know, on their website, is to increase the numbers of underrepresented minorities in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So, and for me, when I try to talk about this, as I said before, I feel uncomfortable using that term to describe what we're trying to do, but I don't know any
mm-hmm.
other language that resonates with people.
Yeah.
That may not sound insincere.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and it, you know, I want to make it clear that it's not that I don't applaud all the efforts and all the progress that we have made in this regard in increasing underrepresented groups in medicine, and you know, there's traditional in some of those in the way that we use the words. In 5 years from now, I might be wrong, right? Somebody else might also be saying minoritization is no longer applicable, right? But at least for right now, I encourage people to rethink their use of the word minority, especially. Indiana University is one of the most diverse schools in the country in terms of about 20% of our student population are underrepresented. A couple of years ago, it was noted that we had the largest number of African-American or Black students, you know, in a traditional white institution. So there have been great efforts, and I have seen the change in really trying not to use the word minority, but I felt with this piece I would give people four reasons not to really use it.
Right. So. And those four reasons you mentioned are stereotype threats.
So I talked about
what a stereotype threat.
So we talk about stereotype threat, implicit bias, the term minoritization itself, and then talking a little bit about majority, minority. So those concepts. So again, I mentioned a little bit in terms of what majority, minority meant for me, right? And if truly by 2050 or 2060, the percentage of non-white Americans will surpass that of white Americans, then, you know, what's the purpose of using the word minority? Because it will no longer be relevant. And I know that obviously that use has been received with mixed feelings, right, in our society.
Well, if you know anything about human nature, we are very good at categorizing people when necessary.
Yes.
We may find a way. So tell us about stereotype threat. I like that. That's an interesting term. What is that about?
Sure. So stereotype threat came out probably around the mid-90s by Steele and Aronson. And it's basically saying that it refers to being at risk of confirming self-characteristic, a negative stereotype about one social group. And we have seen a lot of research, especially in education. One of the first studies was in educational research, and basically they had students, right, that were Black African-American students, and they basically, when they didn't emphasize the fact that they were Black or African-American, they actually performed better than the white students. So basically, they, you know, demonstrated that there was some sort of impact on Black college students that may perform more poorly on standardized tests when race is emphasized.
Something subconsciously happening to them that makes them perform poorly when you emphasize race.
Yes, yes. And we have seen it in other areas. We have seen it also in gender, examples in gender. So, again, basically, if we're going to say something that will preface with the word minority, you might be automatically triggering that stereotype threat.
Right. Okay.
And it relates, again, also to that Pygmalion effect also, which, you know, again, says that you pretty much perform based on other people's expectations. So low expectation leads to low performance. So I think that's also a concept that people can relate with, right?
Right. So what about implicit bias? You mentioned that as well.
There has been so much written about implicit bias, and I think that while, again, I applaud the efforts on educating, especially academic medicine, I mean, every school of medicine now has an implicit bias program, and they may do implicit bias training for a zillion things, and sometimes it feels like this is a brand new thing, but it is not, right? Implicit social condition has been out there forever, but sometimes we just really grasp on tightly to things like this. It just happened to be 20 years later. But when we talk about implicit bias, we're really looking at, they have been looking at things like medical student success, a recent paper by a colleague of mine talks about the AOA membership. There's papers out there talking about implicit bias and letters of recommendations for residency and for other things. So implicit bias really plays a role in our minoritization, even when individuals, again, don't know. And that's why it's implicit. In other ways, the most shocking studies that I think I've seen, especially in my role as vice chair, is also looking at resumes and CVs and, you know, all that kind of thing. But studies have shown that, you know, the whitening of resumes has been a thing for minoritized groups, that they felt that when they whiten the resume, then they would have a better chance. Therefore, they were already eliminating words like, again, these minority organization memberships or minority scholarships or anything that could identify them as a minority. So all this, again, is part of that combating implicit bias.
And also my understanding is with implicit bias, the studies show that you can't just do annual training and say you're all good. You need to do proximal to the event, such as if you're going to have interviews for medical school, you need to do the implicit bias training right before the interviews so that people are aware as they do the interviews about their implicit bias.
Yeah, we truly try all that, and it has definitely shown great success. Our institution as well, I think there might be other 9 or 10 institutions are part of an NIH study called Bias Reduction in Medicine, and we're trying to, again, train all of our faculty to go through this training out of University of Wisconsin with Dr. Molly Carnes. The interesting thing, again, about implicit bias is that we're truly focusing on making people aware of their implicit biases, but by no means this means that that we will regulate behaviors.
Right.
So now we are making you aware of your bias, which is great. And hopefully for those individuals that really want to be diversity, equity, and inclusion champions and allies or upstanders or whatever we want to say, this may actually be a very good thing. But by the same token, I have also seen how bias is turning into one of those terms that makes people roll their eyes, because here comes the training that is going to tell me what is wrong with me. So I've seen both aspects. The truth is that each of us has implicit bias. There's no way around it. It's part of our defense mechanisms. But it's what we do with the information that we now know about ourselves.
Exactly. All right. So we've talked about minority-majority status, which you said by 2050, 2060, the quote-unquote minorities will be a majority of the population. So the term minority may have no utility when that happens. Stereotype threat is when individuals manifest negative stereotypes about themselves when those are reinforced. We talked about race and gender stereotype threats. Implicit bias are those subconscious beliefs we have about certain groups. And minoritization, which, get this straight again, takes the emphasis off of the individual and talks about the systems that makes individuals a minority in their society. All right. So, so at the end of all this, what term should I use next time I go out and start talking about, I'm going to say it, minority trainees, minority faculty? What should I use so I feel more comfortable talking about this and not feel like I'm being sincere about my beliefs?
Yeah, I know. And this, you know, may not resonate with, you know, many people. They may say, oh, my gosh, why are we complicating this? So I'm going to leave that up to you. What I propose is that we can.
No, no. Hey, wait. That's not fair. I got the expert
to give you
some answers.
No, I'm going to give you two choices here.
Okay.
So what I propose is that we consistently use underrepresented groups in medicine or underrepresented in medicine as long as we are underrepresented, or that we actually fall into that minoritized students, minoritized faculty as appropriate terms. You know, somebody also asked me about marginalized, and I believe, obviously, the marginalization exists. My only preface with that is that if we preface by saying traditionally marginalized, maybe it makes more sense than just using marginalized. Otherwise, we're doing the same thing as minority, as using the term minority. So I would say either we stick to underrepresented in medicine, or we talk about minoritized students, minoritized faculty, minoritized trainees, et cetera, et cetera.
I like minoritized. That all makes sense. I like minoritized, like minoritized students, minoritized faculty, for a couple of reasons. One, it puts the emphasis on the structures and systems and not the individual. And I think that that is a discussion and a concept that we need to continue to push in our society so we can stop victim blaming individuals.
Yeah.
And two, it's easier to say. It's less of a mouthful than saying underrepresented groups in medicine or minoritized students. It just kind of flows. It flows off the tongue. So I'm gonna start trying to use that. So I'm gonna let you know how it goes. It's gonna be my new thing.
Sure, I am sure you will. You will use it more. And I encourage also academic medicine. One of the things that I said that is part of my job is to be a translator. As a higher ed doctor that has worked in medicine for so long, that I really try to bring conceptual frameworks and theoretical frameworks that should be used in medicine. And I think a lot of my fellow behaviorals and social scientists and all of those, that's what we bring. We bring different concepts, if you will, and theories that could be applicable. Also, at the end of the day, I know that you told me not to say any bad words, no curse words, and I'm not going to use any, but the word minority has been greatly weaponized, I think, since 2016 or maybe prior to that. And this is a way to actually not have that feeling that the word is being used in academic medicine as also a weapon that because the 45th president doesn't use it in terms of endearment, right? So
right.
we have to really consider that our lives are also outside of medicine, and there's nothing else to say except that the word has been weaponized. So
and
this
by
is
using
another way
terminology. But using
yes.
this terminology, we can actually defuse that weaponized word. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm ex-military. I got these terms that kind of float around, and I just want to use them every now and then. And you gave me the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Well, good.
Silk Soto, Vice Chair for Faculty Affairs, Development, and Diversity at Indiana University School of Medicine. We just talked about her paper, Time to Consider the Word Minority in Academic Medicine. You must check it out. Silk, thank you for joining us on Race, Balance, and Medicine.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I think it's a great conversation. If anything comes out of it, is one more doctor or physician using the word minoritized.
I'm all about it right now. I'm all about it. I'm out. All right. So where can we track you down if somebody want to get in touch with you later?
Well, you can track me down through the Indiana University Department of Medicine or through Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter. So at Dr. S. Soto on Twitter.
So Dr. S as in Sam Soto, S-O-T-T-O. S-O-T-T-O. S-S-O-T-T-O on Twitter.
Yep.
All right, y'all. This has been Race, Balance, and Medicine. I'm Dr. Brian H. Williams, and I know you're listening to the show. We are now in season 4. Your family, friends, and colleagues may not know about this show, so you need to tell them to get caught up. Go to brianwilliamsmd.com. Check out some of the older episodes. You can follow this show at anywhere you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, on and on, wherever you want. You can listen to it. And lastly, please, I want to make a show that's worth your time. So send me your critiques, complaints, suggestions. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, a 5-star rating is always helpful, so I've been told. So I would appreciate that as well. I want to tell you all, Happy New Year. Welcome to 2020. I hope this year is a good year for you in every possible way that you deserve and imagine. I'll see you next week on Race, Balance, and Medicine.